Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Welcome, everybody. This is our End Times Friday, and this is our monthly call with our good friends Eric and Rabbi Ephraim out of Israel. Where are you guys located today?
Today I'm in Tel Aviv, and I'm in Jerusalem.
Okay. And did you have a good trip, Eric, in California?
Yes, I did. 3 weeks in the States, splitting my time between Los Angeles, Seattle, and St. Louis, Missouri.
That's nice. And you got to be with your, kids and grandkids.
Yep.
So that's fun. Well, we are in the middle of, the Trump trip to Middle East. I have lots of questions about that in terms of your perspective on it. The reports here is that, he met with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and he's bringing back money that they're going to invest in the United States. And, have defense products, sold to them, etc. We noticed that he didn't stop in Israel. So the question to you is, what's being reported for, the purpose of his trip, the results of his trip, and how is this affecting Israel that he didn't even stop by with a courtesy meeting, which was surprising to us. And we thought, at least a dinner or, a couple hours to catch up. But give us any input and thoughts of what's going on from the country that you see.
I think there are pundits here in Israel that feel that this was a intentional slight. I'm not a pundit, but I'm not sure I agree. Look, the president doesn't have to stop in Israel every time he comes on a trip to this part of the world. It's our understanding that he's probably averaging a conversation with the prime minister about every other week. And so they're in regular contact. And, President Trump likes deals, and he likes to be like sort of the center of attention. And there was no big, trillion-dollar investment under discussion coming from Israel into the United States. So I, for one, don't feel like that's the problem or something for us to be concerned about here in Israel. There are a lot of things to be concerned about on this trip that we're hearing about from an Israeli perspective, but I wouldn't put that near the top of the list. I think the top of the list from our view is what's happening with the negotiations with Iran. Mm-hmm. And what we're hearing now from some of the coming from the Iranian press is that there's discussions, there's going to be a deal that limits a level to which Iran can enrich the uranium. Now, let me remind your listeners and viewers that there is no country in the world that's developed or has an enrichment program that hasn't within a short time created a nuclear bomb that's capable of being delivered. There are a lot of countries that have nuclear power, and most of them buy uranium at the 2.5% or 3.something% level that's the right level for nuclear power plant. So there's absolutely zero reason in the world why Iran needed an enrichment program of its own unless it wanted to produce a bomb. And right now, from what we're hearing, is that they're near an agreement that limits the level to which Iran can enrich its uranium. And so let me also remind, your listeners and viewers that this is not too different from what occurred during the Obama administration, that subsequent to, and Trump blew up in his first term of office. So it's very confusing to us here in Israel, why we are where we are, or what we're hearing, what we're hearing. And it's very, very concerning. As we mentioned in your last talk, that should the United States reach an agreement with Iran, there's little to nothing that Israel is going to be able to do to take out the Iranian nuclear power plants of its own. Because Israel is not going to go, serious damage to a country in which the United States has entered an agreement with, like, of this nature. So it's going to put Israel in a very, very difficult, precarious position, knowing that Iran is within a short step from having a nuclear bomb. What's so ironic is when you read all the reports that we're reading from here, the Iranian economy is like in total freefall. There are people dying of starvation in that country. They have blackouts virtually 80% of the day, no electric power. And water is scarce and almost unavailable in many parts of the country that was very rich in natural resources until this government took over. So, you know, from our view, it's like the Trump administration is throwing them a lifeline with getting very little in return from what we can see. But that's the number one, two, and three item in our list here that's causing us concern. There are also people concerned here about the lifting of sanctions against Syria, okay? So just to remind some of your viewers and listeners, the current president of Syria was unelected, but he took power in the vacuum that was created by the Israeli Defense Forces when it crippled Hezbollah and took out its leadership. That left an opportunity for the rebel forces to move in, and the largest and most well-funded one supported by Turkey moved in and took over. And the current president, up until I think a year ago, was an active member of ISIS or one of its affiliates. And so I don't know how one turns over a new leaf in 6 months to a year, but at least most, you know, people talking with this guy think he has. Now, I can understand why President Trump wants to give the guy a chance. He, you know, throwing him relief on part of the sanctions will encourage him in the right direction. I think the criteria for judging whether the guy is doing what he should, high up in the list should have been, he should have committed to destroying all of the existing chemical weapons plants and storage facilities that were built by the previous government. As your listeners may recall, President Obama, during his term of office, created a so-called red line that was never enforced when Assad used chemical weapons against his own population. And also, why wasn't respect for minorities such as the Alawites or a different sect of Islam, the Druze, which are a totally separate faith, and the Kurds, which is a totally separate entity, nation, why wouldn't that be a high... I mean, that's a real test of a leader who wants to try to create a republic, is how he treats the minorities. And all the reports we're hearing in Israel from our Druze community, which is in very, very close connection with their relatives actually living in Syria, is that things aren't looking too good for the minorities in Syria. And this really has been emboldened Turkey, because they are going to get a big windfall by building, they have commitments to basically help build the infrastructure in Syria now, and generating the money would be paid by Qatar or the other Gulf countries, and that money will flow into Turkey, who will build out the infrastructure needed to repair the country. And Turkey is, from an Israeli perspective, these days with its current leadership, wasn't always this way, but with its current leadership, is a pretty big red flag for Israel right now, especially if they get F-35 jets, which is a huge concern here, because we could be ending up in dogfights over Syria with the Turkish F-35s. So I would say that's number one, two, three, and four of concerns here. On the good side, there were rumors that there was talk of building a civilian nuclear capability for Saudi Arabia as a part of their current agreements, and then nothing was announced in this regard, so I presume this issue has been tabled somewhat. There's, for the first time in our memory, the weapons being sold to Saudi Arabia will put it on the parity capabilities here in Israel with the F-35s. It's also broken a previous kind of unwritten rule in relationships between the United States and Israel that Israel will always have a qualitative edge over other Middle Eastern countries. So, but that's a little bit further down the list, I think. Unless there's a radical change in Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia is on a trajectory to try to liberalize its country, its population, its economy, which is all good news for the Middle East and Israel.
Yeah. Rabbi, as you think of these concerns, you know, what's the perspective of the population there in Israel of these concerns and Trump's visit and, you know, what's going on with the Middle East?
We came in with a lot of hope that Trump would be, you know, the knight in shining armor, and he really seemed to have Israel's back, and now we're not sure. And everyone understands that, of course, his number one priority is the United States. but we thought that he would really be standing by us and at least the, you know, the most important things like Iran's nuclear program, and he's said it so many times, and is he backing down from that? What is the deal that's on the table? So yeah, people I would say are worried. We're adding that to our list of worries. And if I can add just to what Eric's saying, also in terms of Iran, of course, that, you know, their entire history was, you know, under the Biden administration, was completely manipulating the United States and lying through their teeth and saying that they would do a deal and limiting their nuclear program, and then just using that to buy time to continue building up their program. And so now it seems like a deal is the same thing, that what's really going to prevent them from continuing their plans and their development towards a bomb. You know, it just looks like it's the same thing that we were in before. So that makes people real nervous. Plus, if the United States makes a deal, then the sanctions will be off. And Iran is the number one sponsor of terror. I mean, they were the ones who funded and built up Hezbollah into a gigantic terror organization. They were the ones who sponsored Hamas, and which resulted in October 7th. And, you know, if their economy is in shambles, or and they're really limited, then they can't be making trouble for every civilized country, not to mention that they threaten Europe as well. So if they're back in the money, they seem to be just as determined to cause trouble and create terrorism and unrest in the Western world, and their goals have not changed. They want an Islamic takeover of the world, and they'll do everything they can to get there.
Go ahead, Eric.
To this list, the situation with Qatar, perspective of here in Israel, I believe, is that they're not really a friend, okay? Certainly not Israel, and there are a lot of skepticism that they're really friends in the United States. I can remind your listeners and viewers that they were the ones that provided money to Al-Qaeda. They provided money to the Taliban. They provided money, if you may recall, the negotiations under the Biden administration for exiting Afghanistan were hosted by Qatar. And the reason is because they're the ones who were sponsoring all these organizations around the world. And here they are, they're funding campuses in the United States, university programs in the United States. They have enormous wealth and a very small population. And so all that money gets spent buying, and democracy and republic is nothing in their thinking, so they just buy their way into whatever they want. They just gave several $1 billion to the French government. One week later, Macron's talking about how terrible Israel is and what it's doing in Gaza. So they're used to this way of buying their way into the halls of legitimacy around the world. I don't understand this whole jet business, you know, the president's received. It seems to me like it's a big red herring, quite honestly, because I'm sure when the Defense Department starts talking about the budget needed to bring it up to the snuff to be able to handle all the defensive systems that Air Force One has to work with and the communication systems that have to be in place so the president can handle any situation when he's in flight, I think it's probably going to be a lot more than the cost of the jet.
Yeah.
So I don't know about this. But that's, you know, the jet is not really our business. That's really the business for you know, the public in the United States to decide whether that's the right thing or wrong thing for a president to be doing. But Qatar is, and it's tried to buy its way here in Israel too. And this current government enabled it to do so. You know, there's a big mess here in Israel. They're calling it Qatargate, sort of named after Watergate in the United States, where there were members of the prime minister's office that, for all practical purposes, got bribes from Qatar during the course of the war in order to promote their image in Israel versus Egypt, which is absurd. And there are many people who are skeptical that Qatar is playing an even hand in being a mediator in these negotiations and just not, you know, manipulating Hamas. And a lot of the money that goes to Hamas came from Qatar.
Yeah.
The training came from Iran, but the money came from Qatar.
Yeah.
So we don't get that.
Rabbi, what's the Israeli population's view of Trump's recent trip, you know, where he basically did these economic deals with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and, you know, bringing back these investments. Do they have any perspective on that? Does it matter to them? What do they think?
I think it's so far down on our priority list. We're happy that America's economy should should flourish, and you know, if he can do like legitimate business deals, I think no one has a problem with that. Israel usually benefits from good investment, open investment, so no problem with that. Our concerns are much more in the security.
Got a question, guys. Right at the time this was happening, there was the release of this one last remaining U.S. living hostage, and it seemed to be unrelated to anything else that was going on with hostages. How do you view that?
Well, that's a really good question, and we're probably going to give you answers that were probably going to be unexpected for your audience. Here in Israel, this was a very controversial action taken. Israel was left in the cold, didn't know anything about it until the very end. My guess is that the American administration felt that there was no need to really involve Israel, since this was, in their views, an American being released, and Israel wasn't being asked to release anything or agree to anything in response, so therefore consulting with Israel wasn't necessary. But the feeling here in Israel is, okay, so that means if we have American passports, we're treated differently than if we don't. So if we're in the IDF, maybe the best thing to do is try to get an American passport, so that should we get captured, then the president's going to come and rescue us or help us. And so it's kind of like a feeling here of a loss of our authority and sovereignty over the situation, that we were basically bypassing this whole thing. Now, giving the president the benefit of the doubt, I'm sure he thought he was doing a really good thing for Israel and the army and everything else by getting a hostage back. And for that, obviously, here people are grateful. They lined the road. When Idana Alexander was released, they lined the highway, in euphoria, welcoming him back. And as best we can tell, the commitment of the U.S. administration in assisting Israel in the recovery of the rest of the hostages is still there. There was a worry here in Israel that, well, once they got the American back, they wouldn't care anymore. But that was, seemed to be a worry that was sort of misplaced. Now it's not clear what's going to happen next. The position of this current government is that Hamas cannot stay in power. They can leave, you know, the leadership can leave the Gaza Strip if they like, and then we can settle this whole war peacefully and finish it over, but they can't stay in power. And of course, they're not going to do that. So therefore, the view here is that they have to be removed militarily, which will be a long, difficult process. That being said, there's a section of the population, part of which is demonstrating in the streets pretty much every night against the government. And polls suggest that it's not a tiny minority. I'm not sure how big a majority is, but it's a significant part of the population that says to sign a deal, get the hostages back, leave Hamas in power, and we'll figure out what to do another day. That has its own set of serious dangers that I personally have difficulty with.
Yeah.
There's an argument, there's so many points of view, but there's an argument here that the reason that occurred was so that the U.S. could stay, almost as though the Israeli government and the U.S. government agreed with this idea, so that the U.S. could say now to Israel, you're free to do whatever you want.
I haven't heard that discussed here. There is a feeling, and I think accurately portrays this current situation. As of now, could change, things are changing very quickly. As I said before, I feel like we're in a weather vane in a hurricane. But as of now, the feeling here is that the Trump administration has not tried to stop Israel from any of its operations, either in Lebanon or in Syria or currently in Gaza. And as your listeners know, there was a large, massive U.S. operation against the Houthis to try to stop them from attacking ships in the shipping lanes when the Trump administration came to some kind of agreement with the Houthis, then on the shipping, then Houthis started directing their attacks against Israel. So there are parts of the population here that feel like our interests should have been included, but I'm of the opinion that the United States probably acted reasonably in this situation. I mean, from an American point of view, an America First point of view, shipping lanes are very important, and they need to be open, and getting the Houthis to stop attacking arbitrarily ships in the shipping lanes is an important thing for everybody around the world and for trade, so that's a good thing. Probably he couldn't get them to agree to stop attacking Israel. There was a missile that landed not sort of not on the tarmac, but not too far away from the Israeli, main Israeli airport. And I think the next day, the day after, the Israel launched an attack and destroyed the, there are two airports in Yemen, and destroyed the one that's under control of the Houthis. The United States didn't do anything to intervene. I'm sure they were informed in advance that Israel was doing this because CENTCOM had to know that Israeli warships were in the air. So the United States didn't seem to interfere with that operation. So to come back to Dennis's question, the feeling here is that despite all these uncertainties that are going on, the one thing that does seem to be viewed as positive here is that the Trump administration is not trying to micromanage our military operations, which is in refreshing contrast to the Biden administration. He tried to micro-control what the IDF was doing.
In other words, tie our hands in our effort to fight our enemies.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time for session one. We want to come back for session two, talk a little bit more about Iran and what position that puts you in, what might happen since you can't allow the, you know, that threat to be there. We've heard a lot about, Gaza, and I would like to talk a little bit more about that, about the position that Netanyahu has taken. And what we'd like to know is, what does that mean? Because we're not, you hear what he says, but we don't know what that means. And then talk a little bit more about Syria. Is you see that moving to a different place if the United States gives them some, leeway, so to speak, that would hurt, Israel. So those are the things we'd like to talk about. And Denny and Kathy, do you have any other questions that we can get ready for the next time?
Just always thinking about the prophetic questions that all this brings up, and Rabbi Ephraim's view on that.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we so appreciate your perspective. You know, lots of thoughts, obviously, about Trump's visit, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, basically what he's done, it doesn't seem to impact you in a negative way per se, other than, you know, what's he really going to do next to protect? And I think you said it, Rabbi, it's about your security. What is that going to wind up with the security of Israel? So thank you so much. And Kathy, we will do part two here coming up.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining us, everyone. If you have questions from today's broadcast, be sure to send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And we look forward to seeing you guys next time.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.